Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. What is consciousness? Where are our memories stored? What's the difference between our brain and our mind? Where do our feelings originate? And can we really transform, rewire, and upgrade our brain to create a new version of ourselves and manifest the infinite quantum potentiality that our consciousness has in store for us? These are just some of the topics on the table today, raised by the book, The Quantum Brain, Understand, Rewire, and Optimize Your Brain, co-authored by my guests, theoretical physicist, spiritual practitioner, and quantum activist Amit Goswami, PhD, and family medicine physician and pioneer of quantum integrative medicine, Dr. Valentina Oniswar. Dr. Amit Goswami, Dr. Valentina Oniswar, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Great to be here.
So I'm going to start, I'm just going to throw this question out and whoever wants to answer it, feel free. What is consciousness? And is it created by our brain or is it the other way around?
Well, for a long time, people have pushed the idea that consciousness is all brain phenomenon. I myself was sold with that idea when I did not yet investigate quantum physics. But after investigating quantum physics and the recent neuroscience data makes it also very clear. Brain cannot possibly generate consciousness. It's impossible. And brain is a phenomenon of consciousness. This much quantum physics is insisting that our observership or consciousness comes first. Brain is an instrument we use to manifest consciousness, make it split into subject that experiences and objects that are experienced.
Okay, so if consciousness comes first, where does it come from?
Well, that's the unanswered question because we posit it this way. Consciousness is the ground of all being. That's the beginning. And that is it. There is nothing but consciousness. In which case, the question really is that how does that oneness, one without a second, split itself into anything? Because oneness is oneness. So that is the question that we answer by invoking quantum possibilities. Possibilities are allowed. Oneness can have possibilities. Among these possibilities are, of course, changes. Possibilities change according to the quantum laws of science. And those laws, at some point, produce an instrument or evolve an instrument that we call the brain. In that brain, there would be a mechanism that we call tangled hierarchy that would produce an illusion that consciousness is split. Illusion is the only way oneness can split itself into a subject that looks at an object, that separateness. Separateness is, in other words, is an illusion. And brain produces it, brain mechanism. So brain, we absolutely have to have in order to have manifest consciousness.
So it's a tool.
So brain is essential for creating the illusion. And the illusion is what creates the material world, manifest world, or all our experiences. But illusion is not the right word. I continue to use that word because the ancient mystics use that word. But truly, it's the mechanism. The only way, only mechanism by which oneness can split is a mechanism that creates the appearance of subject and object. In this way, we avoid the idea that what we create is trivial. It's not trivial, obviously, because what we create has a permanence, and it evolves and evolves purposefully. And therefore, the world is possibly not an illusory epiphenomenon that is to be neglected.
Well, my brain has a hard time getting around all of this, for certain. So what is the mind then? What is the mind?
Mind is the possibilities of consciousness that gives meaning to our experiences. Mind is the meaning giver.
And meaning, as I understand it from your book, is really, really important for creating memories.
Yes, meaning is crucial to make sense of the images that the brain can create. Those images are electrical images. Brain is an electromagnetic apparatus. So electrical images makes no sense to us and no sense to consciousness. And consciousness uses its mind to give meaning. And this is what we do every day when we watch TV or look at a computer screen. Again, we are getting electrical oscillations of electrons, really. And we are interpreting them with our mind. And that's how I see you, and you see me, and we see Valentina and all this.
So, Valentina, let me ask you this. In the mind of a baby, you know, a very young baby that is having experiences, it's got no context for those experiences. Do they have any meaning for them? And if they don't, does this explain why we often don't remember things from when we were very tiny?
So I would say that for children, especially very small children, they are very much open to pick up everything from their environment, you know, from parents. Especially, it's very important. There are researches that show that the child has a very good and strong and harmonious connection with the mother, especially the first year of life. You know, mother is essential, you know, and then the father and the society and all that, you know, because how come that children of the same culture would grow their brains differently also, you know, because of course we are basically the same, you know, as humans, but talking about the common human condition makes no sense in this way. So all the organs, amygdala, hippocampus, all the organs of the neocortex, you know, all, of course, they do basic functions the same way. So that's the universal portion of the brain software, you know, and that part of the brain development is suggesting homogeneity of human beings, right? But then again, of course, everybody says that, yes, we have infinite potential that is waiting for us to explore and to take this homeostasis of a human being living to further and further heights of happiness and intelligence, all these infinite potentialities of archetypal exploration and the way they are represented later on via the mental and the vital, you know, that we refer. But the evolution of the brain's genetic hardware is over, you know. So kind of during evolution of genes, there was also simultaneous evolution of the vital software. Software, you know, hardware, physical, software is the function, right? So the former is Darwinian, you know, Darwin, and genetic. And the, you know, the vital software is you can call it epigenetic and Lamarckian, right? And so it's we have to understand also the four major imperfections that define the base level human condition, you know, that show later. But again, during development of a human being from childhood to adulthood, there are all these barriers that we have to understand them. You know, that's why if you want, we can talk about them. Which are these four major imperfections that define this base level human conditions? You know, they are barriers to self-exploration also, you know. So all these barriers to creativity and access to consciousness, they lead to the development of what we call brain-mind doshas. In Ayurveda, there's this term doshas, you know, this mental slowness, which can also be called dumbing down, which is likely to be attributed to autism, you know, cause for autism, and then hyperactivity, which leads to ADHD, which is easily nowadays everything is ADHD because of course we don't take care well of the kids. We just throw, you know, take this laptop or this phone, and then because we don't have time for them. And then also there is intellectualism that eventually leads to depression and other pathologies. So, and yeah, it's very complex working with kids. It's, I mean, really, it's so wonderful. I don't know personally, I don't have kids, but it's fascinating. And I think it's very, very important if we want to contribute to a healthy civilization.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned ADHD and autism because in your book that you talk about presence. And so much, we're being overloaded with information. You know, I mean, we've seen what's happening now with our youth that just can't cope with the amount of information that's coming at them all the time. And it's coming in such small bites that it's constant distraction. They don't even have time to absorb it, let alone be present with it. And that is causing problems with the children. That they are not able to make the memories, and if they don't make the memories and they don't have the meaning, then what happens to their brains?
But I can just one word, because I mean it's huge, a lot to talk about this, but I love very much the work of Dr. Gabor Mate. Yes. And he has a book which is called Scattered Minds, which I would recommend, you know. Actually, it's not an inherited disease. Some people are really addressing it as if it's inherited. It's not like that. This ADHD, it's a reversible impairment, you know, and the development delay, if you want, you know. And yes, it origins many times in infancy, you know, and it's rooted in multi-generational family stress also and disturbed social conditions, a stressed society. But again, I mean, it's a lot of studies like in USA, ADHD among school children has reached even, I think it's more than 15% of the population, you know. So, and it's getting worse, I would say, you know.
Yeah.
And again, it's not genetic in origin, you know, it's a result of a child growing up through this enormous environmental stress, both from family and society, but also due to technology. Again, truly, this technology is causing worse addiction than other drugs, you know. So it's really, you're playing with the brains of your children if you just throw in their arms some technology that, I mean, before they are able to choose, you know, to learn what to choose, before they are able to develop a level of attention, we shouldn't give to kids phones and stuff like that, you know.
No, exactly. I mean, I've been appalled to see two-year-olds being given phones to play with on planes just to keep them quiet. Mind-boggling. You know, I do want to go into other areas, but first, this whole thing about memory is something, and meaning is something that I'm really interested in because, you know, we have an epidemic too of dementia and Alzheimer's. And, you know, I personally know, you know, several people who have this and their families are dealing with it. And people say that if we don't have our memory, who are we? You know, do we still have consciousness? What are we conscious of?
Very good question. And we cannot even ask a serious Alzheimer's sufferer to answer the question in any kind of reliable way. But yes, there is instantaneous consciousness, obviously. Because an Alzheimer's patient, even in fairly late times, can respond to a conversation, except that when it comes to referring to it even a minute later, they cannot respond, which means that even their working memory, short-term working memory, all that is suspended. They're just not acting anymore. And that is explained. Explanation is rather simple, immediate explanation. Immediate explanation is that the relevant neurons are all covered with these amyloid beta proteins. But what produces the amyloid beta proteins, that is where, of course, theory has made major progress, and this is where we have contributed. Quantum physics suggests that it's the immune system which really gets inflammation and that inflammation, stress really is ultimately responsible. But that's only one of the factors. The other factor is that people today do not use their mind and use their memory making capacity for making new memories anymore. And one system that is not used for a very long time, the immune system has a system by which it recognizes an organ. And those recognition apparatus cannot recognize the organ anymore if the organ is, the neurons are being used for something else. And this is what the brain does. If you don't use brain for a specific purpose for which it was intended, that portion, then that portion is used for other purposes. But then the immune system has no way of knowing that the brain is doing this. And that's when the immune system miscues and start attacking autoimmune disease. And this is how the inflammation that causes the eventually the amyloid beta proteins that covering the neurons get. So we are understanding the mechanism at least. And that means that we can also tell people that, look, you got to pay attention to things as they're intended. You cannot just really get the brain to do everything for you, because the brain will do, but it will do in its own way, in its own efficient way. It will use whatever is not being used for other purposes. And that is disastrous for the immune system because it cannot recognize that apparatus anymore.
So if somebody has Alzheimer's and it's not just short-term memory, you know, maybe long-term memory too, has there been any studies done about dreaming? Because I do wonder then if they're dreaming, do they have a memory in the dream or not?
Actually, dreaming certainly can be remembered if we immediately after we wake up from the dream, if we write it down, the dream, and then we can sleep and write it down later. But a little cue is needed. That's memories. There is memory, but there is no associations to remember. When we make memory in the conscious state, then we use our recall mechanism immediately in order to memorize. So we have not only recalling and augmenting the probability of recall, but also we are using setting up associations which will help us recall the memory. But for dream, there is no associations automatically, because dreams are all memorized after you wake up.
Right. Yeah.
Sandy, can I add something about this? Yeah. Sandy? Yeah. So do you know that I understand that it's the age for Alzheimer is going less and less. So it's even in the 40s nowadays, you know? So it's something that is very, very interesting to see. And again, the idea is that mind has to be used for processing meaning, you know. So nowadays, everything that we see is very superficial, you know, and the meaning is really lacking. And again, if we want to retrieve something easily, it has to be meaningful to us over time, you know. So that's why we call it dharma, also archetypes in this. So if we live a life without anything, no aspiration, you know, we are not, definitely not on our path, kind of, you know, we are living somebody else's meaning, you know. So what's happening again with the children? It's again, processing information, not meaning, you know. Information, you find it only online, you are telling to kids and to everybody, you know, and you just have to know how to retrieve it. But again, it's kind of like this information, again, it's other people's meaning. So what we find on internet, it's other people's meaning, not our own. And then, of course, we remain empty, you know. And then, of course, it's information is much harder to remember then when we derive again the meaning of it ourselves, you know, we sweat a little bit, you know. So what happens with this information based approach is that a kid, you know, can learn the subject enough to just ace an exam, for example, you know, but then he or she would rapidly forget this information. Yeah. So of course, what's happening in education nowadays, like how many subjects are there that are really useful, you know? So it's education, we have to really, like, education needs a deep change there, you know. But again, some memory, yes, it's already built in the brain, because our brain comes with some of the memories, such as instincts, you know, and then the negative emotional brain circuits that, again, we need to become aware of them, you know. So this is called implicit or unconscious, right? And in the quantum model, this unconscious we refer to as the collective unconscious beyond our ego control, you know. So that, I think, is something that you may find in the dreams analysis also, more or less, you know. Mm-hmm. And then it's also the memory that we make consciously, yeah, for like the conscious or explicit memory, yeah. So part of this explicit memory is called declarative memory, you know. Because again, you can declare something about it, you know. So it was raining and it was making me sad, you know, for example, the declarative memory. Okay. And then it's described, the neuroscience is describing four steps of this declarative memory: acquisition, storage, retrieval, and forgetting, you know. But again, before a new memory is made, we need to acquire new information to memorize, you know, and that's the acquisition phase, and so on. You know, but again, I go back and again to this fact that the mind is for processing meaning, and we need to bring this meaning in our societies.
It's obvious, and yet at the same time, it was such a surprise to me when I thought about that. And I was thinking about my own memory, and, you know, I read hundreds of books, and people are always saying to me, well, tell me about that book. And I say, I don't remember. You know, I might remember one thing. But I do know that when I read something that really, really gets to me, because it really has meaning, that stays with me. So I don't know why it never occurred to me.
Also, you'll notice that if you put meaning in something that you are reading with your emotions, passionately, that's the key thing. Emotional memory is much easier to retrieve than very dry, just mental memory.
Yeah.
So there are two things, association and feeling association.
Yeah. So tell me about the quantum self, because you say quantum science tells us we have two selves, the quantum self we're born with and the ego self we gradually develop. When you talk about the quantum self, are you talking about the soul?
Well, they look at the situation again. Oneness is splitting up. Quantum collapse defines the present moment, and that's when oneness is splitting up. But this splitting up produces a self, an identity with the brain, but that identity still has no previous memory, and therefore it is a cosmic identity. There is no identity with anything in the brain yet. And therefore another process to produce complete forgetfulness, complete stability of the state of consciousness. In the quantum self, you can easily go back to the oneness. But in order to produce a state from which going back to the oneness would be very hard, in other words, the state will become stable, we have to have secondary processing. And that happens because of the memory making and feedback of the memory to perception. So that feedback produces a phenomenon that we call dependent co-arising. Dependent co-arising of conditioned objects and conditioned self. That's the conditioned self that we call the ego. Now, what's the proof of this? Neuroscience has given us beautiful proof of this. The first process, the collapse process, is non-local. Non-local meaning it, different parts are able to communicate without signals, which means that in that process, the whole brain or many different parts of the brain are involved. Whereas when we are in the ego, then we have constricted consciousness. We literally are considering only conditioned objects, and our self that is looking at conditioned objects is also a very constricted, limited consciousness. And so it is very local. And indeed, neuroscience has discovered that when we are doing a task, our brain alternates between the task-related areas and the self-agency area, which is very localized. Whereas when we are creative, when we are spiritual, when we have a experience of love, intense feeling, positive feeling, then the brain acts like it's many places, and they all are coherent with each other, move coherently with each other like a chorus line. And this coherent movement is a giveaway to quantum movement. So brain literally becomes quantum when we intuit, when we have a creative insight, when we have an archetypal experience like love, when we have experience of any archetype for that matter, like beauty, we look at a sunset, we can get into that quantum self. Whenever we can get into the present moment, we are in the quantum self.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that when we are in love, when we are really feeling that intensity of love and very, you know, whether it's with a partner or in love with our children, we don't have room for anger. We don't have room for hate or war. Because we are in this state where we're so happy, we want everybody else to be happy. And yet there's so much war going on in the world right now. And when you think about what we were just saying about meaning and information overload, it feels like we are losing our quantum selves.
Well, it is a very difficult condition right now in our world. It is true that we often get constricted and look at everything from a constricted consciousness. To get the perspective of an expanded consciousness, it certainly requires a certain amount of equanimity to our negative emotional brain circuits that Hamilton was earlier talking about. We cannot help but be moved by sadness, sorrow, all the negative things in the world. And that certainly constricts our consciousness, takes our attention away. We become distraught, we become stressed. So these are all problems for the brain. Brain works best when it can work coherently with different parts, different parts being in coherent movement. If it is focusing on one thing, especially in that midbrain, the amygdala, then we are in trouble.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think it is because, again, nowadays what you see and all these new waves, even if there are not so many cases and so on, so it's causing a lot of contraction, right? So ego, consciousness, ego is contraction, yeah? And expansion is, again, the signature of non-locality. And as you said, heart, you know, or love, which is a crucial factor in terms of feeling the expansion. And now I see that it's also a test, like for all of us, you know, where we really are, you know? So in the midst of all kind of crises, also diamonds can appear, you know? So now it's kind of the test. How can we really manifest compassion? Can we really have this ability to include others, you know? Because again, that's expansion of consciousness, right? And if not, if we choose, because again, this is a choice that we do. Even not choosing, it's a choice, you know? So if we allow ourselves to just be dumbed down for all that's happening and stay with the nose only in the news and pick up only the negative things, and we forget what is there under our nose, you know? Because again, everybody, we have the heart, so we are not going to lose this quantum self, you know? It's there. And the thing is that whenever we get in touch with this quantum self, and again, nowadays we have to pass this test, manifesting creativity in an intelligent way, you know? Mm-hmm. We are supposed to be intelligent beings, not here, and also influence others in an intelligent way. But yes, what we see, it's the other way, it's true. But again, whenever we are in touch with this quantum self, we have an experience of expanse of consciousness, you know? But usually we don't have this encounter in a discernible way. But as you say, you feel suddenly that you want all this happiness and love to the, you want this, you want to give this to others, you know? But again, this kind of experiences arise not always, right? So mainly we don't even look what's there under our nose. Sunset is still there, you know? How many times we have to look at the sky to see that also, you know? And of course the brain is limited. We have to be aware of that, you know? But again, we are not going to lose our hearts, and the quantum self is still there, you know? And it's a certain attention which is needed, which is called supramental attention. And that also means recent centeredness, to be aware that you're collapsing your choice. You have to really make conscious choices now, much more than in the past, you know. And then again, so yes, heart is again the key of the signature of non-locality. The heart is towards expansion of consciousness, to feel this expansion, you know, because intuition in the thought level, you know, the expansion is quickly blocked by a mental habit of rational thought, you know. But in the heart, especially as a child, you know, and even later, you don't immediately cover it by rational thought, you know, which is, and the child is not fully developed yet, you know. So kids, as you see, they are altruistic in nature, right? And again, spending time in nature, you know, trees don't have this kind of constraint. We can learn so much from nature. Vital energy is free. Nature is very helpful. And again, yeah, again, children, if children grow up in a city surrounded only by buildings, you don't get that. And then you don't grow to learn the value of expansion of consciousness in this way.
No? Sorry. Well, your book, The Quantum Brain, is all about understanding, rewiring, and optimizing the brain. And we'll, when we come back after the break, we'll dive into that a bit deeper. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with theoretical quantum physicist, spiritual practitioner, and best-selling author Dr. Amit Goswami, and practicing physician and pioneer of quantum integrated medicine, Dr. Valentina Onassis, and we're speaking about the book, The Quantum Brain. We'll be back with more on your quantum brain after the break.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
If I could be you, and you could be me for just 1 hour. If we could find a way to get inside each other's minds.
Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Well, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse. Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back. Dr. Amit Goswami, in The Quantum Brain, you write that Freud introduced the concepts of the unconscious and conscious, and in between these two states, there's a twilight zone called the preconscious, which is below the level of the ego. Tell me about the preconscious.
Well, this is a discovery, really a fantastic discovery, I must say. The data clearly suggested, data like, you know, they set up two dots at slight angle to each other, and they're lighted by different colors, red and green. And then they're separated, right? So the red color is illuminated for about 150 seconds. And then there's a 50-second gap, and then the green dot is illuminated. Of course, we have persistence of vision, so we see light more or less continuously. But you would expect to see the red for a while, nothing, and then green for a while. Instead, what one sees is that light is moving from red to green, and All of a sudden, in the midpoint, it changes to green. How does it change the green at the midpoint? Because 150 seconds only red, and then 50 seconds nothing, and then only the green light is coming on. So it's certainly not in the midpoint. So this is a mystery that Daniel Dennett actually, in a book, suggested that this mystery suggests that there is editing somehow. But of course, there's no materialist model, there's no brain model which can understand pre-conscious editing. But he was aware that there is something going on which is very interesting. Now, in quantum science, we analyze, I remember I talked to you about dependent co-arising, this gap between quantum self and ego. That gap has been measured by neuroscientists. It's 500 milliseconds. Okay. I'm sorry, before I said 150 seconds, it's 150 milliseconds. So 150 milliseconds plus 50 is 200, plus 150 is 450. It's still less than 500. So actually what is happening according to the brain model that we have is that the dependent co-arising, that is going on. So what is happening is red, we don't perceive even the red until 500 milliseconds. And then only we'll perceive green. So all that is, all that stuff. I mean, 150 milliseconds, if you count it rationally, then red, we should see after 500 milliseconds. So 500 milliseconds, we must begin to see, and then we should see red, and then nothing, and then should see green. But the secondary processing that is going on, and that processing we have red processing, that is red is going on for 500 milliseconds, but green is starting after only 450 milliseconds. No, I'm sorry, 200 milliseconds. So green also will be in the that dependent co-arising phase. So everything is, there is a, in that 500 milliseconds, both green and red are present. This is the thing to notice. That actually it is not true to say that red first and green. But before we can see anything, both green and red are there. And so what the brain does is to interpret this, our mind, of course, mind also, mind and brain together does, is to interpret this in the rational way, halfway. So there must be red, halfway it becomes green. So this kind of preconscious editing can only be explained if you take the model that there is quantum self first, then wait for 500 milliseconds for secondary processing, and then only we observe. Then only the ego can really collapse it. Then, of course, the question is, how does the quantum self collapse then? Well, for that, quantum physics has a beautiful answer. We won't go into it in details because it takes too long, but it's called delayed choice. I see now that my choice not only collapses the experience now, but also collapses all the experience that went before, without which I could not have my ego experience.
So even as I may be thinking about something and about to react on to something, something else is ahead of that.
Something 500 milliseconds earlier, the brain is already active. And this has been measured. This was the first warning that before we have a thought at the ego level, the brain is already active. So somebody who is measuring the brain waves, they could tell from looking at your brain that you will have a certain thought a little later.
Okay.
So they are good that you cannot have any free will, because how can something that can be predicted can be called free will? But of course, the assumption of the realization that there is quantum self resolves the issue. We have free will, but it's at the level of quantum self.
Right. Okay. I think I've got that one. Dr. Valentina, neuroscientists theorize that the limbic brain controls the feelings at the first two chakras, and that this may also have something to do with controlling the immune system and the gastrointestinal system. Can you explain this to me?
So it's again, it's first of all to understand what's in the brain, and also what is with this negative emotion brain circuits that are 5 times stronger than the positive, and why all this necessity to create the positive ones, right? And again, immunity, it's a big one to understand. We'll talk more, we will find more, much more about the immunity in the upcoming book on medicine. But yes, it is related with the third chakra, if you want, the navel area, and the heart, mainly with the heart chakra, you know. So there's a lot of research about this already. But then you said something very, I mean, clearly the first two chakras, Mulatara chakra, Svadhisthana chakra, let's say the names, you know, in the root chakra and the sexual area. And indeed, you see nowadays we live in this society where, again, it's sort of survival-oriented society, and it's all what is in it for me. That's, again, an ego state. But first of all, it's, again, all this, like, do I have what to eat? Do I have enough money? Do I have I don't know what? So it's, and then, again, the sexuality, of course, it's a lot of misunderstanding there, and how instead of being an engine of evolution for a couple relationship with love, usually it's something that makes us just waste a lot of our potential. You know? So these two areas are very important. But actually, we speak in quantum science about the three selves, if you want, at the level of Manipura chakra in the navel area, and then at the level of the heart, and then at the level of Ajna chakra, and eventually not so much researched above the head. We speak about the 7 main chakras. So we speak about, again, kind of the experience of the first two levels has the chance to collapse. We use this term, to collapse at the level of the belly area, yeah, and the Manipura chakra area, which is also the seat of personality, you know. So developing personality is, again, mandatory. Also, if you think of expansion of consciousness, if a child doesn't develop a harmonious personality, so even if he's very loving, eventually he will, I mean, he needs to develop this kind of strength. But then again, let's go back a little bit, if you want, to the base level human condition, you know, because again, we have this quantum self-ego, the I-me polarity, yeah? And again, what is in it for me? The ego, yeah? And then we have this negative emotion brain circuits, which are built into the brain, you know, and part of these circuits, again, seem to be instinctual, you know? So instinctual, you think of the first three chakras, actually, you know? It's Mulatara, Svadhisthana, Manipura, you know? So it's instinctual. And if you think in the Native American tradition, they even describe the diaphragm as if all that is under the diaphragm is corresponding to what is it's under, you know, it's in the earth, you know, and what is above, it's what is above earth. So kind of we start becoming humans when we integrate those lower areas, you know, which are very important, but yes, they are more instinctual, let's say. And unconscious triggering is followed by this immediate survival-related action and later thoughts of emotion, you know. But again, if you put imagination also in the picture and this habit, which is called mentalization of feeling, we misuse these negative emotional brain circuits and cause ourselves even more stress, you know. And then, of course, we have also the pleasure circuits, which give us dopamine, endorphin, and other molecular high when activated. And this can lead to addiction, of course, sexual addiction, but not only, you know. There are opiate drugs that work on the brain like endorphin does, you know. So one habit leads to another, and drug-like addictions are very hard to quit, you know. So again, it's interesting. You can see in the book, everybody, so for reasons of survival, what's happening during our evolution, the brain has taken over the control of these instinctual feelings connected with the lowest three chakras, you know, which again relate to maintaining the body and sexual reproduction, you know. And then at the heart level, even the Christian tradition, you have the cross, you know. So it's kind of where the things unite, you know. The heart chakra is about love. And then the brain seems to have instinctualized at least two kinds of love, you know, of course, maternal love and romantic love, and even other types of love, actually, love as altruism and so on, you know. And then we have the mirror neurons that enable us to mirror and experience what another person next to us is experiencing, you know, enables us sympathy and a sympathetic response that is called altruism and so on.
Mm. It's fascinating how neuroscience, if I'm understanding this correctly, is, you know, for a long time, scientists, there's been a great separation between spirituality and science. And now what you're sharing in your book, the neuroscience is showing actually that, you know, there is no separation. I mean, Dr. Goswami, you say that quantum science scientizes a different source of memory. The Eastern yoga philosophy has been telling us for millennia, which is reincarnation. You know, and I do wonder how many neuroscientists are accepting this knowledge, you know, easily, because it must challenge everything that they've thought about.
Actually, they do accept meditation because there is just so much data that suggests meditation improves the brain in terms of allows the brain to relax, balances the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. These are all results. They were produced in the 70s and the 80s. And that result could not be refuted. And therefore, most scientists allow the fact that meditation is an important thing to do. Doctors are allowing meditation to be a regular regimen of their patients. And so we have made some improvements, but of course the word spirituality is kept off the table when we use such things as meditation and even yoga in the form of hatha yoga, these asanas. But the spirituality is never mentioned. The fact that we slow down in our consciousness, the fact that in that slowdown, unconscious processing can occur, and therefore spiritual experience will be facilitated because the door to intuition opens, creativity improves. Those aspects are not mentioned very much except by creativity theorists. Creativity researchers have been a boon to spirituality because they have more and more realized that spirituality and creativity are the same process and the creative process, and they have something to say about that. They are in fact explaining some of the obscurities of the spiritual process that led to spiritual transformation. Now we know that they all are products of archetypal investigation, investigating these aspects of consciousness that is the basis of human values, love, truth, beauty, justice. These are the things we investigate in creativity as well, except that our product that we produce is the outer product, a book or a theory or music, whereas when we work on spirituality, we are working on ourselves. We are working to wake up to the quantum self. We are wake up to expansion of consciousness, more happiness. This is the only difference, same process. So in this way, we have the transpersonal psychologists, we have the creativity people, we have creative people all over the arena, even business people are getting interested in this kind of idea of how you can optimize your brain, because everybody wants to be creative. So it's not as dark as the materialists would like. Media, of course, makes it very difficult. The conventional media is clearly materialist, and they won't entertain anything. There was some openness at one point, ESP and telepathy, but that closed up. You see that nobody talks about those things anymore. Now it's only conspiracy theories and crazy stuff. That's what liberal media cries about.
The Quantum Brain is, I mean, it's quite a fascinating book because it really does cover everything that, you know, many people in the spiritual arena have, you know, they know, they experience, they believe, but they don't have any science to prove. And what you're showing is that, you know, quantum science is definitely confirming all of this. I mean, things like, reincarnation and near-death experiences and many other things, dharma, karma, etc. But I don't. We're almost out of time. We've only got about 5 minutes. So I do want to talk about the health aspect of your research, because your next book, Quantum Integrative Medicine, A New Paradigm for Health, Disease Prevention and Healing, is due out next year. Can you just say a little bit about that?
Valentina, you should say.
So, we are very, very happy about this book that is going to come out next year. And already started this journey with the book, The Quantum Doctor, you know, that Amit wrote many years ago. And this is just taking all that work to a much more integrated, and it's so much meaning, and it's like an encyclopedia. I really recommend that. And of course, there are levels of disease and levels of healing. Of course, the physical level of disease, it seems easy to talk about, you know, the first sight, you know, is the body's normal physics and chemistry that gone or awry, you know. So the causes, of course, can be both external, internal, and so on. But again, then we ask what is causing disease at the vital level, you know, because at the physical level, we have the physical body hardware, you know, which is subject to physics and chemistry. At the vital level, we also have this vital software, functional programs that are made from repeated use of the blueprints of liturgical fields. Now, liturgical fields is a term you heard about, morphogenetic fields from, yes, Rupert Sheldrake. Yeah? Yes. So liturgical, it includes much more of the function, you know, so some of the software is universal, but then it's also a personal component due to the development from child to adult while you grow, you know, and this individual physical body is unique because of its structure, and also an individual's vital body is also unique for different reason, because of the individual nature of development. Yeah, and certain vital blueprints and programs are used more than others, and propensities that can become a pattern of a functional personality. So an individual vital body, you know, which can have certain imbalances built into it, or can acquire imbalances due to interactions with your physical, vital, mental. And again, it's of course a dynamic imbalance or balance between creativity and conditioning. So it's a beautiful, it's...
Yeah. One of the things that we discovered, Sandy, that we might be interested in, is that we can change physiology.
Yeah.
We can change physiology of the organs. So for example, if we change the physiology of the heart organ and make it a quantum heart, then we reduce the chance of breast cancer and all kinds of cancer. Similarly, if we reduce if you wake up the cells at the navel chakra, pancreas, then we can eliminate virtually type 2 diabetes. So this is great news for the medical community, what we have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we know there have been many, many stories of people who have had spontaneous remissions, spontaneous healings. Just the other day I was handed a book by somebody who said that all cancer is caused by trauma. Kinesiologists will say that all ill health is caused, you know, it's energetic and emotional. And I think that this is bringing us much, much closer to that, isn't it? That we understand that our emotions, our thoughts, the way we live our lives and all of the, you know, whether we make positive emotions and memories, etc., as opposed to negative ones, that we are actually changing. And our immune system.
Of course. And again, mind can create a disease or healing, you know. So often the healing is cannot be found even at the level of the mind. But again, it's many times we misuse the mind and we create our disease, you know, and which is again a message of transformation, actually. But again, the idea is that one has to take a quantum leap. If you say quantum healing, it refers to the supramental level of our bodies. You know, there's a body called the supramental body. And this doesn't exclude the mind. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't exclude the vital also. So this leap to the supramental is fixing all this wrongness of a mental meaning, you know. It's fixing the mental, also if it's a wrongness in the other levels, you know. So we just need to know how to work with them. You know?
So We've got about 1 minute, less than that. Very, very briefly, what is the first and the best thing that we could possibly do to start transforming our brain, transforming our health?
Well, creativity, and love.
Those and attention.
Good.
Good. Wow. I mean, I can't wait to read the next book, because I think that we clearly are on the verge of something so spectacular. Now it's time. It's time. And we desperately need this information. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Amit Goswami, Dr. Valentina Anisar. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. I wish we had longer. So, The Quantum Brain, Understand, Rewire and Optimize Your Brain is published by Blue Rose Publishers. And for more information about Amit Goswami's work, and especially your new academy that you've started, go to amitgoswami.org. It is .org, isn't it? It is. Yeah. Well, that's it for today. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another edition of What is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me. Thank you both.